President Trump was released from the Walter Reed Army Medical Center yesterday after being hospitalized for COVID-19. Throughout his hospitalization, there was confusion about just how severe the president's condition was, the kind of treatment he was receiving, and why his medical team suddenly deemed it necessary to transport the president to the hospital last week. So how much does the public have the right to know about the health of an American president? And when the president has a disease that has killed 210,000 Americans, how much privacy is he or she allowed? You can join in at 800-642-1234. What should the public be entitled to, if anything, when it comes to knowledge about the health of the president? What kind of job do you think the White House has been doing so far when it comes to releasing information? What questions do you have about the kind of privacy a president is entitled to? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Julie Rovner is Chief Washington Correspondent for Kaiser Health News and host of Kaiser's What the Health podcast. Julie, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Do we have something like a standard operating procedure when it comes to a presidential health problem and what to tell the public about it?
Well, you know, we have rules and we have norms, and this president has basically blasted through whatever norms we've had for a lot of things, not just healthcare. Traditionally, the public has been kept apprised of at least most things about presidential health. Not everything. There's a long history of sometimes serious health issues being, you know, covered up. Franklin Roosevelt was in a wheelchair, which a lot of people didn't know because there was this sort of tacit agreement not to mention it among the press at the time. Woodrow Wilson spent the last 17 months of his presidency presumably unable, you know, just barely able to function, which most people didn't know. So, you know, we've had examples of way worse things, but I will say that the last few presidents have been pretty open, and they've, you know, included Republicans and Democrats.
I've seen a lot of people over the last couple of days pointing toward HIPAA protections as an explanation for why we don't get the information about the president. Can you unpack that for us?
Yeah, HIPAA was a law that was passed in 1996, but what we think of as the HIPAA medical privacy rules didn't take effect until 2000. So we've really only had them for the last three presidents, George W. Bush, President Obama, and now President Trump. And they basically say, and this is true for everybody, including the president, that you are entitled to keep your medical condition private. And anybody who holds that information, including a doctor or an insurer or somebody who does billing, is not permitted to allow any of that information out without the patient's express permission, which means that President Trump or any other patient can give those health professionals permission to tell people about their medical condition. And obviously, in this case, President Trump did not, or he said, you can tell them this, but not that. And that is within his legal rights under HIPAA. However, it might have been better if the doctor had said, you know, I've been asked not to discuss that, rather than sort of dance around the way he did.
What do you think we should know in a case like this about the president's state of health, Julie?
Well, obviously, the public wants to know that the president is physically capable of doing his job. I think that should be the bare minimum. And as I say, most recent presidents have basically hewed to that, including, you know, sort of things that, you know, when presidents have had colonoscopies and have been under sort of not quite full anesthesia, you know, they have transferred powers to the vice president for a few hours. I remember that happening several times. I mean, presidents have generally been extremely good about making sure that the public knows when they are not in complete control of their faculties. And we, with this president, you know, there have been so many things that he and his administration have told us that have turned out not to be so, that it's hard to know what to believe at this point.
As you look at what we've heard from the White House, doctors, spokespeople, and others over the last few days, do you see a lot of contradictions in the different messages we've gotten, maybe even within a few hours of each other?
Well, yeah, I mean, what we saw Saturday morning when the doctor came out and said everything is great, and then Chief of Staff Mark Meadows walked up to the pool reporters and tried to be off the record, except there were people with cameras and recorders running, and said, no, things are not great. We were really worried about him yesterday. So, I mean, that was sort of a microcosm of, you know, everything about this entire episode. We still don't know when the president was really first diagnosed, because they won't tell us when his last negative COVID test was. So we don't know how long he's actually had the disease. It means we don't know sort of where in the disease process he is. Is he really in the early few days, in which case it would be a few days from now you would expect problems to most likely crop up? Or has he had it for 8 to 10 days, in which case he really might be on the downside of it? There's just so much we haven't been told that it's hard to know. And, you know, many of the, I see frustration of doctors who are, you know, obviously don't want to, who have not examined the president, so they don't want to say, but who have dealt and taken care of a lot of other COVID patients, but don't have the basic information they would need to suggest, you know, what kind of shape the president might be in.
Talking to Julie Rovner from Kaiser Health News, looking at the president's COVID diagnosis and the information that has and hasn't been released from the White House. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How much do you think we in the public should know about the president's state of health, whether it's this president or any other? 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's bring on a caller now. Paula is with us in Madison. Paula, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. My concern is that the misinformation we're getting now from the president, who keeps saying that this is, you know, COVID's not so bad, it's not that bad a disease, and kind of encouraging people not to wear masks and not you know, not stay out of groups, but he keeps failing to tell everyone about the resources that he has that we don't have. I mean, he was on all these medications, and we, even with good insurance, I wouldn't get those medications unless I was on a ventilator and, you know, death was rolling down the road. So I just want maybe a comment on that. It's very distressing to me.
Paula, thanks a lot for the call. Julie, the president's framing of the disease, especially given, as Paula says, the access to arguably some of the best healthcare on the planet right now.
Yeah, that's been very upsetting to a lot of public health experts who were hoping that this could, you know, be an object lesson for, yes, this is a very contagious disease, and there are some steps you can take. And by the way, the White House didn't take a lot of those steps that were recommended. And now we're seeing, you know, not just the president and the first lady, but, you know, a couple of dozen people who appear to have contracted COVID, most likely from each other. And also the fact that the president, yes, was given medications, including one completely experimental medication that it's very difficult to get, another that's still the subject of, you know, that's not quite FDA approved. So of course now he's going to say that he was cured, but we don't know by what, because he's gotten so many medications. He's kind of a clinical trial of one. As far as we know, the medications he was getting have not been delivered together ever to any patient. So it's not really, he's not setting necessarily the best leadership example for what to do and what not to do with COVID. And certainly what a lot of people have been complaining about is that he's playing down the danger of this disease to the point where he's talking about going to the debate next week when he might well still be contagious.
Bring on another caller at 800-642-1234. George is with us in Onalaska. George, hi.
Hi there. Thanks for letting me call in.
What do you think, George?
Well, our president is doing everything he should do. HIPAA law protects him. He's the only one that can authorize anybody to give any information. And quite honestly, it doesn't make any difference to the public. This all gets blown out of proportion.
George, thanks for the call. So George saying it's within the president's rights to control the information, and George is okay with how the president has handled it.
Well, it definitely is within the president's right to control the information. The question is does the president owe something to the public? And remember, he's not just president right now. He's candidate for re-election. So he's asking the public to you know, basically give him 4 more years. And do they deserve the right to know what is the status of his health? And as I say, that's not so much a law. It's been a norm, but it's been a norm that's been followed by pretty much every presidential candidate for the last several decades.
Thanks for calling in, George. We're talking to Julie Rovner right now, Chief Washington Correspondent for Kaiser Health News and host of Kaiser's What the Health podcast. She's with us to talk about the current health of President Trump and how the White House has been communicating to the public about his illness. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about the messages we've gotten from the White House and the president's medical staff about the president's health? What do you think about what the public deserves to know? How much privacy do you think a sitting president in the United States is entitled to when it comes to their health? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or tweet us at Central Time WPR. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk about how the White House is communicating with the public about the health of the president since his COVID-19 diagnosis. Our guest is Julie Rovner, Chief Washington Correspondent for Kaiser Health News and host of Kaiser's What the Health podcast. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about what's been released to the public? Should the White House be more transparent, do you think, about the president's health? How much privacy should a sitting president have when it comes to their health? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's bring on another caller now. Jack is with us in Marshfield. Jack, hi. Jack, are you there?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, go ahead, Jack.
Yeah, I apologize. Hey, I just wanted to say something in the name of partisanship as far as we seem to be getting a lot of I'm a long-term NPR fan and a fan of this show, but it's so one-sided it's almost grotesque. I think it turns off a lot of customers because the president's certainly not touting that this is not a bad disease or that you know it's not dangerous. It's definitely dangerous. I think early on it was just put in the context of flu because it just recently, in the last, let's say, couple months, have outdone annual flu for number of deaths. So it's not like it's dangerous, but it does affect a certain demographic and a certain group of people with comorbidities. And I've been in medicine the last 40 years of my life, so I'm pretty well versed in what's going on here. And just because of the way that he speaks of downplaying this a little bit does not mean that he does not believe it's a serious disease.
Jack, thanks a lot for calling in at 800-642-1234. Julie, the president made the flu comparison again, I think just today or yesterday.
Yeah, he did. I talked about how 100,000 people die of seasonal flu. That's actually way more. I think that 1968 was the last time that 100,000 people died of the seasonal flu. That it's usually, and the president himself actually had this right back in the spring. It's more like, you know, 20 to 40 to in a really bad year, 60,000 people. And of course, now we have 200,000 Americans dead, more than that. So this is obviously more serious than the seasonal flu. And yeah, a lot of people are lucky and either get a mild case or have no symptoms at all, but it can hit anybody at any age. It's not just people with comorbidities. There are a lot of young people. There are a lot of people in their 20s and 30s who can either get sick and die, or we're now seeing stories about people who've gotten very sick and basically haven't gotten better. They're called the long haulers. So it's a serious disease, and actually, you know, science doesn't know all that much about it yet, which is part of the fear. It's not just the flu. It's not just a respiratory disease. It affects all of the organ systems. There are blood clotting issues. There are gastrointestinal issues. There are other circulatory issues. There are neurological issues. It is a very nasty virus.
Thanks a lot for calling in. We'll go to Diane now in Stoddard. Diane, hi.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. Now the president has a pre-existing condition. Medically, how is he going to be handling this in the future? And how are the Republicans going to address this issue? Since we don't know what their health care plans have been for the last 30 or 40 years. Also, with having pre-existing conditions, you know, it's impacting kids that have asthma and diabetes and whatnot in elementary, junior, and high school. And a lot of us haven't been tested. So since we haven't been tested, but we've had a 2.5-3 week rendezvous with this disease and illness, I guess we wouldn't be considered pre-existing condition. So we're kind of fortunate.
Diane, I'm going to jump in. You gave us a lot to work with there. Let's get to this idea of pre-existing conditions. And Julie, I know a story you're watching closely is a Supreme Court case coming on the Affordable Care Act, which includes protections for coverage involving pre-existing conditions. People have been wondering if that goes away, is COVID-19, having had it, given the mysteries you were just talking about, going to interfere with people's ability to get health coverage?
Yeah, I think clearly everybody who's had COVID will be determined to have had a pre-existing condition. And as I say, it's because we don't know what the long-term consequences are, even for people who don't show any symptoms, whether there, you know, are issues that did not manifest themselves when they first got it, but may come back later. And if the Affordable Care Act is struck down, which the Trump administration is in court asking for that to happen, then those protections would go away. And President Trump has said repeatedly that he supports those protections, but he's done nothing that can ensure that that they remain or be put back. And in fact, he doesn't really have the power to do that himself. Congress would have to do that.
Right. The president had signed an executive something that said pre-existing conditions are covered. Did that have any force of law?
No, he signed an executive order that said it's the policy of the federal government that people with pre-existing conditions will be protected, but there's no enforcement mechanism. He doesn't have the power to do that. If the law was struck down, there would have to be new legislation passed. And Republicans have introduced some bills that say they would protect people with pre-existing conditions. But while they would require that insurers sell to them, they would not include all of the protections in the Affordable Care Act. In other words, that insurers sell to them at the same price or to necessarily cover all of those pre-existing conditions. There's a lot of additional protections that go in to really protecting people with pre-existing conditions.
Thanks for that call. We're talking to Julie Rovner from Kaiser Health News about the president's COVID-19 diagnosis, information shared by the White House and the medical staff. Back to your calls now. Carolyn is with us in Sauk City. Carolyn, hi.
Hi. I was calling to ask, I had heard that the president might have been given dexamethasone, and it's so hard to know what's actually happening and what's not. I wanted to see if your guest knew about that and if it's true, what the implications of that might be.
Julie?
Well, we were told that the president was given dexamethasone, which is a corticosteroid for inflammation. It's a common drug for many conditions. I have taken it. I had shingles and was given it some years ago. It does, I mean, it can mess with your head. That's sort of the polite way to say it. I've seen a lot of people now reporting, you know, that when they were on steroids, that it made them manic. It can make you feel really great, but you don't stay on it for very long, and they actually taper you off of it, and coming down off of it can be extremely unpleasant. So we don't know whether he's still on it, what dose he was on, how, you know, when he will be or if he is being taken off of it. There's just an enormous amount that we don't know. But there were a lot of doctors who were very concerned about sort of some of the president's behavior, given the fact that he is reportedly on steroids.
Thanks for that call. We'll go to Jim in Dubuque, Iowa. Jim, hi.
I have a question about the reliability of the test. The inventor of the PCR test, Dr. Kerry Mullis, won a Nobel Prize for inventing it, says it's not to be used for medical diagnosis. It's medical fraud. And on the CDC's website, if you look up, what does a positive test mean? It says you might have antibodies to the virus that causes COVID-19 or another member of the coronavirus family, such as the one that causes the common cold.
Thanks for that call. Julie, I know there were some questions about the reliability of the testing that the White House had been using and also the wisdom of relying just on that testing.
Right. Well, I think the president's had a number of different tests. The White House has mostly been using a rapid test developed by Abbott, which is not PCR test. The PCR test needs reagents, and it has to be done in a lab, and it takes some time. Those are the ones that, when there was such a big backlog, it was taking 10 days. They are the most accurate tests that we have. I mean, it's very difficult here, but one would think that with the number of different types of tests that he's had, that there seems to be little doubt. And obviously with the symptoms that we're told that he was showing, I don't think anybody doubts that this is what he has, assuming that the information that we're being told is correct.
Thanks a lot for that call. In our last couple of minutes, Julie, I just wanted to get your take on what you're watching for right now with COVID-19 and the response here in Wisconsin. We are seeing the most cases, and unfortunately now we're seeing hospitalizations and deaths creeping up here in the state. What do you have your eye on in the progress of this disease?
Yeah, you know, I think we're all watching to see what kind of a flu season that we get. You know, in some of the sort of in the winter for the Southern Hemisphere, we saw very low cases of flu because people were doing a good job wearing masks and social distancing. And that not only prevented COVID from spreading, it prevented the flu from spreading. But we're not doing as good a job in the United States at things like social distancing and wearing masks. And so, and, you know, it's hard to get people to get flu shots every year. I'm seeing anecdotal reports of spot shortages of flu vaccine. It's still pretty early, but I think a lot of people are getting their flu shots earlier than they normally would. I know I did. I usually wait till towards the end of October. So that's a big issue. And obviously just watching to see, you know, where cases are going up. They seem to be sort of creeping up slowly in a lot of places. And that's really a big concern.
Julie, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you.
That's Julie Rovner, Chief Washington Correspondent for Kaiser Health News and host of Kaiser's What the Health podcast. She joins us today to talk about the president's COVID-19 diagnosis and how the White House has released information about his health. You could still weigh in on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We heard from Carol there who says, I think we have the right to know of any physical condition that may affect a president's ability to do their job. Russ writes, the president has the same right to privacy that we all have. Tell us what you think again over on the Ideas Network Facebook page.